This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is a good Friday morning to you. Wake Up Call here on the SportsMap Radio Network. All right, so last night was not a must win by any means. So I want to make sure I get that clear. No team that's 6-3 and fighting for the division and the toughest division in the NFL needed to win last night. But let's think about this for a second. If you're Seattle and you've been struggling defensively for a bit, you've already lost to Arizona. Kyler Murray lit you up in week 7 with 4 touchdowns and over 400 yards passing. It's not a must win, but psychologically you'd want to do much better than that, and they did. Last night, Seattle, a 28-21 victory where the defense helped contain Kyler Murray a bit, held him to under 300 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, got to him a number of times, including Carlos Dunlap, the recent addition on the team coming in from Cincinnati, making the sack on 4th down to prevent Murray from doing the second Hail Mary of the in back-to-back weeks. Could have probably tied the game. But in the end, again, Seattle is going to take the lead in the division for now. The Los Angeles Rams play Tampa Bay on Monday night, and they could go to 7-3 with a victory. But as I said at the top, this was not a must win, but I think for Seattle, it's a very, very important win. Down the stretch in the next couple of games, they've got very winnable games. They've got the Eagles and the Giants and the Jets and Washington. Those are the next, I should say 4 instead of 3. Those 4 games are very winnable for them. But they would have gone into those games against 3 NFC East teams and the lowly Jets, who are 0-9 right now. They would have gone into those four game set with a 3-game losing skid and losing ground in the division a bit to a team that had beaten them twice in Arizona and a team that is on the rise. I think this does have a psychological effect for the Seahawks to go into the next couple of weeks where, you know, look, they're not going to take those games lightly, but they also know they can kind of control a little bit more of their fate with the wins against these teams that are struggling. But losing to Arizona and losing track in a division where you kind of want to win the division, you don't want to stumble in and throw in an extra go on the road or whatnot to open up the playoffs. Last night was critically important to them in getting to that goal. We'll talk more about that game. Plus, a wild college football game last night in Oklahoma as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It's Friday, so we've reached the end of the week as we head into the weekend. So you know what that means. Coming up in hour 2, we're going to go through the schedule. We're going to give you the early games, the late games, the Sunday night game, the Monday night game, and tell you whether or not it's got some value or importance or what you should watch out for in our schedule preview.
It's all worth watching.
It's all worth watching. Yeah, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. And then in hour 2, we got John Hendricks of the Saints News Network, because the Saints are taking on Atlanta this weekend, and it looks like Jameis Winston is going to be the starting quarterback. Or maybe Taysom Hill. They haven't really been solidified on that either way.
Well, actually, from what I've heard, it's I think it's called Tamus.
Tamus, that's nice. That'd be good.
I think that's what they're going for. That's a nickname that Drew Brees gave them.
Nice.
And it might actually happen now. You might have to be rooting for Tamus.
If you're a betting guy, Jameis Winston is likely to be the starter, but Taysom Hill will be used. Of course he will. Why not? He's used when Drew Brees is quarterback. Why not? Why wouldn't he be used if Jameis Winston's the quarterback? So we'll talk about the Saints coming up in hour 2. So like I said earlier, last night was a fun game. Last night was a really cool game because you can see Arizona and Seattle, these two teams that are they're vying for the division lead with LA, and this was not, it didn't feel like the first time they played, which was kind of a cool, like, classic. It was a 37-34 game, and Murray played really, really well. It didn't feel like that was more of a fluky win for Arizona. You know, Arizona found themselves behind, came back, you know, tried to make this an interesting game towards the end, had an opportunity to chuck it into the end zone to set up a potential tying touchdown with the extra point. But instead, Carlos Dunlap got to Murray on the fourth down, sacked him, and that was it. And they got to him three times in the game. And they held his statistics to something more pedestrian in this one rather than in week seven. I mean, Murray threw for about 270 yards, had two touchdowns. That's about it. It didn't go deep very far. It helped him, contained him in the run game. But again, this was a game that, you know, was close in the fourth quarter. Then there was a safety. Then there was a field goal by the Seahawks to sort of extend their lead. And the Cardinals had an opportunity. Was it must win? As I said, no, but it wasn't. It was, if you're Seattle, this is what you want for momentum going into winnable games. You want to not trail Arizona, not only in the standings, but also in the tiebreaker. You don't want to be 0-2 against a team that might run and win the division. Plus, they still have to play the Rams later on this season. They've already beaten Los Angeles once already this year. I mean, they lost Los Angeles already this year. So you don't want to be in a position where you lose to the Rams twice and the Cardinals twice in your division. So this was a good win for Seattle. It was an important win for Seattle. Certainly not a must win for Seattle. But that's where you got last night. And it was a good game. Look, Thursday nights can... You roll the dice with them, right? We don't know how teams prepare in the short week. Some teams come and they're duds. They just are awful. And it's, you can blame the short week. You can blame a number of things. They're not as ready to go on Thursday as other teams. Last night, yeah, there was some problems with Arizona's penalties. They made some critical mistakes. They shot themselves in the foot, as Kyler Murray said afterwards. But nevertheless, it was still, again, Seattle played particularly well defensively, which is rare for them. They have been struggling defensively, both injuries and just a secondary that just is not making plays. But they did enough yesterday. And Russell Wilson, this MVP season where he's got 30 touchdowns, and he struggled in those two losses at Buffalo and against the Rams. This was a game in which he got the help he needed. He needed the defense to give him an opportunity to sort of contain the game a little bit. And they did. And credit to them. And Dunlap, who came in from Cincinnati, kind of wore out his welcome there after a long stint with the Bengals, came in looking for a fresh start. They trade for him, and he produces. He gets two sacks, made four tackles, the big sack at the end on fourth down that sealed the win for Seattle. That's a good win for the Seahawks. And Arizona, I don't think this hurts them at all in terms of the way we perceive them anyway, right? Arizona is playing with house money as of right now. They're 6-4. They're in this race for the division. They are in the race for a playoff, even with the expanded playoff. And if we didn't have an expanded playoff, they'd be in the running for that too. But this is, again, if you pull this back a second and not know necessarily the details of this game in terms of Murray not really getting up and running, not doing what we've seen Murray do in the past, if you just pull this back and you say, wow, when 2020's over, Arizona and Seattle are just going to split their season series with each winning at home, that's fantastic for Arizona. That's a fantastic move for Arizona. Now, a win would have put them in a really interesting situation because they would have been 7-3 like the Seahawks are now, but they would have won five of their last six games and really moving and would have a really good shot to beat the Patriots in their next game and playing the Rams and the Giants and the Eagles coming up on the schedule. Right? All of a sudden, Arizona's not only putting together a season just to compete for a playoff spot. Now we're talking about Arizona competing for seeding, like real legitimate seeding in the NFC. So, again, an important win, not a must-win for either team, but it was a good one. Did you happen to see the highlights of the college football game? Many of you probably missed it, probably didn't want to watch it. It was Tulsa against Tulane, a double overtime game. Tulsa, to many of you who may not know this, they're ranked in the top 25. It's a weird ranking because they were 4-1 going into the game. And, I mean, 4-1 with a lot of cancellations. We haven't really, like, it's hard to get a feel for an AAC team when so much of the attention is on the Big Ten, what's the SEC doing, how the ACC is doing. But Tulsa's got a pretty decent team, and they played Tulane last night, a Thursday night matchup. Tulane is okay. They're about 500, but that didn't matter. Tulsa won this game in double overtime on a walk-off interception return for a touchdown. But how they got to overtime in the first place was pretty fantastic. They were going down to their third string quarterback after losing the first two quarterbacks to injury. And he leads them to and came back in this game. He scored on a touchdown run, two touchdown passes, one of them on fourth down, and then hit a Hail Mary at the end of the game to send it into OT. And Tulsa then wins it on a walk-off interception return for a touchdown, where the young man returned it 96 yards for a touchdown. And Tulsa goes to 5-1 on the season. By the way, this weekend, there's a couple of good matchups in college football. Indiana, Ohio State. You got a couple of other ones going down. But the committee is going to be releasing its rankings after it's done in early next week. I'm really interested to see what they're going to say about where we are right now in college football. It's, you know, we know that the committee likes a couple of things, right? We've had what, 6 years with this now? So what do we know about the committee? We know, one, they like big wins. They like when you have the big win on your schedule against a ranked team, or, you know, maybe somebody that's around your level, the big showdown, if you will. They like that. They don't like good. They don't like bad losses. They don't like you getting blown out. They don't like when you don't show up. They don't like those at all. But they also like a schedule. But that has to be thrown out, because every schedule now has been altered to the best it possibly can be based on COVID. The committee has, for the last, 6 years that they've done this, they like it when you get out of your conference to play football. Go schedule a game. We will not penalize you. Trust us on this. You want to go fill your schedule with a bunch of cupcakes? Do it at your own peril. Go get a top 25 team from another conference in a preseason matchup in Atlanta or Dallas or a place like that. Go schedule a non-conference game before your conference schedule heats up. Go get those games. But nobody could. Nobody can't. Alabama can't go out and play anybody else. They've only got to play what's in the SEC. Ohio State, same thing. So nobody can create the big, huge Chick-fil-A kickoff classic this season. So what would the committee, how does the committee account for having that aspect missing from their analysis? Big wins? You only get what you can get. Can't really go get one. You know, if you want to travel to Happy Valley to take on Penn State, or go to Columbus and play Ohio State in a non-conference game, that's fine. It'd be nice to get a win there, but you can't. Awful losses? All right. Are we going to put a lot of emphasis on that? Now, what about these teams? Now, this isn't for the top four, but, you know, the committee rankings are important for schools, because it's kind of the definitive where are you in the college football world ranking. We've sort of accepted the AP is one thing, the coaches poll / SID poll is the other. But the committee, they're the ones that are supposed to see everything, analyze everything, judge you on what you are compared to where other teams are. It's not supposed to be some sort of political statement like you see some other voters do, where they say, I'm voting, you know, two losses in the SEC is still bigger than one loss in the ACC. Maybe the committee feels that way, but maybe they don't. It's supposed to be sort of this non-political entity. You're Coastal Carolina, where do you stand? You're Louisiana, where do you stand? I mentioned it, Tulsa. And the reason I bring up Tulsa is because they're going to be in a top 25 conversation. So where are they putting some of these schools that got football underway, these non-Power 5 conference schools, got up and running, started to play some college football, and, you know, others followed. Some of these conferences got started a little bit earlier, and some a lot earlier than the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. SEC started late September. There were some already games rolling along. So Saturday, again, some matchups. You've got Northwestern and Wisconsin, as I mentioned, Indiana, Ohio State. I think there's a couple and I don't think there's so many in the SEC that are a big deal. I mean, but you got Bedlam in the Big 12. You've got Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. That game is going to be in Norman. When it's all said and done, when the dust settles, how would the committee look at it? So, again, this weekend's games, and then following Monday, Tuesday, is when the committee will be releasing their schedule. All right, coming up, NBA news yesterday, Klay Thompson. And now one particular player is saying no to a lot of money. He's being called crazy, but is he? We'll discuss that next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see their selection. The professional parts people will help you find just the right wiper blade for your vehicle. And they'll install those wiper blades free of charge. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so we've got we'll have the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. As we continue in the next hour, we'll give you our NFL weekend preview. So Gordon Hayward of the Celtics has decided to opt out of his contract with Boston. He's going to walk away from $34.1 million and enter free agency.
Chump change.
That is chump change. Here's the deal. Who's going to offer him more money than that at his time where the league lost over $1 billion last year and had to spend over $100 million just to get in a playoff and a championship? Who's got that kind of scratch to bring in Gordon Hayward, who got injured in the bubble, by the way? So naturally he's been called crazy because he signed a 4-year deal. It was worth $127.8 million. Puts him back with Brad Stevens, his coach from college, right? But he's been hurt. And he missed the most of the bubble. The guy came back. He's now going into free agency, right? So he's been saying, look, who's got that kind of money? Nobody's going to offer anything near that kind of dough, especially in this post, COVID world we live in now where the economics are so uncertain. I mean, my God, they're going to be playing in empty arenas. Who's got this kind of money? However, there's a couple of things to think about here. If you're Gordon Hayward, is there something larger than money, the initial $34.1 million going into a final year of a contract as a 30-year-old who has suffered a number of injuries? Is he, for example, looking for long-term deal? Even if it's less money initially, there is a little bit of long-term security. Maybe he gets another 4-year deal where maybe the Celtics don't give him a good enough deal at all, depending on where this season goes. Maybe he just wants out of Boston and wants to control his fate. Because remember, if you're the Celtics and you owe Gordon Hayward $34.1 million, and let's say the season isn't turning out the way you want, he could be traded to somebody just so Boston can get rid of that money and move on to somewhere else. So when we look at initial money in contracts, it's always easy to sort of point and say, man, that's crazy. Because it kind of is. Let's be honest, it kind of is. Especially when you're talking about a uncertain level of economics when you go into COVID, right? But the idea that there are maybe other things at play. We talked about this with James Harden, turning down an opportunity to make $50 million a year. But he doesn't have a ring. He does not have a championship. And he can have all the money in the world, more money than he needs to spend, setting himself up for generations. But the reality of it is, when you go to the gym every day, when you practice every day, when you work with your teammates and learn to get along and all of the things that you have to do in this league, it is not just to get a paycheck. Eventually, the paycheck just becomes additional money in a large bank account. Every 2 weeks or whenever they get paid, you're just adding a pile of money to your investment portfolio and your accountant's numbers to play with. They're already at a level where anything they want, they'll get. You want that six-figure car, you want that $10 million house, it's all good. So it's not about that. It is about controlling something else about their life. And for Harden, it is this desire to look at the landscape of the NBA and say, you know what? I want to win a championship. I can't do this whole career without winning a title. I had a taste when I was with Oklahoma City about what it was like to be in the finals, and I want to get back there again. And looking at where this league is going, maybe my best opportunity is to go to Brooklyn, team up with two guys where the pundits are saying it's not going to work, but it might give me an opportunity to at least get into a position where I'm in a 7-game series for a championship. Now, is Hayward thinking about that? I don't know. Is Hayward on that same sort of thought process? I don't know. But as he has developed into an all-star, right, he has become more, he has more of an option to dictate where he wants to go and what he wants to do with his career. Freedom and the ability to control that freedom is an attractive part of opting out of a contract or just getting into free agency anyway. You know, we saw this with Carmelo Anthony. Remember when Carmelo Anthony was being wined and dined at one point all around the NBA, went to Houston, was in Chicago, but eventually he just stayed with the Knicks. Everyone was wondering if he wanted out of New York, he wanted to go somewhere else. But in the end, he stayed with New York. He could have just stayed with New York to begin with. New York was the only team that offered him the large amount of money. He could have just said, well, there's no need to go around the NBA or to the available cities that are looking at my talents. I'll just stay where the money is where is the most. And that's ultimately where he ended up, but he wanted the whining and the dining. They all do. They all want to feel wanted. They all want to be sort of pampered a bit. Let's go to dinner. Let's talk. Let's put some numbers together. And for Hayward, maybe there he sees something with the Celtics and he's like, this is not my town. This is not my city. Maybe this isn't my team, or playing for Coach Stevens isn't the same. And I'd like to control where I want to go. And in order to do that, I'm going to make the wink, wink decision or a head turning decision to walk away from $34.1 million and head into free agency where I know that number is not going to be matched. No one is going to give him that money, right, to play next year. There is not going to be a deal on the table for Gordon Hayward where he's going to make that money playing in 2020-21. But maybe he's thinking, but somebody could pay me 20-something and make that over 4 or 5 years, which would be, you know, put him in at 35, which would be a little bizarre. But nevertheless, who knows? So you've got a guy that has struggled with a few injuries, looking for an opportunity for some freedom and walking away from a lot of money. Again, if this was $19 million or $20 million, you'd go, hey, go take your chances. Go venture out there in the public and go see where you're at. Take a trip. If the Celtics still want you, you know.
But haven't we seen this with negotiate a deal before?
See it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, but they're just looking for longevity.
But we're not seeing it in a COVID world,
right,
where we know the money won't be matched. We're not seeing it at a point where that $34.1 million is his right now. Right now. He gets it. He gets every nickel of it. The Celtics, no matter what their economics are, they're going to have to find a way to pay that $34.1 million for him. Now he goes into an unknown world of where the economics are really for NBA free agents,
I guess,
especially a 30-year-old.
Is he looking maybe for like a 3-year, $34 million?
That's what gig? I'm wondering. That's what I'm thinking. Does he want money to extend his career where he can? If he plays for the Celtics at $34 million, that's fine. But who knows what, after he gets done with that contract, what the new contracts are going to bring for a 31-year-old with some injury problems, right? Maybe looking and saying, look, I'm kind of an attractive player right now for some teams. Maybe I can squeeze in a 5-year deal that's worth longer, you know, more money over the long term of that deal, but keeps me in a guaranteed money situation for 5 more seasons rather than playing at 34 and then really not knowing where I'm going to be, especially if I suffer another injury, then I'm bouncing around this league. I don't want to do that. I'd rather control my fate. I'd rather see if I can get something that extends me to my mid-30s, and maybe I'll make just as much money in that sense than taking a gamble and being out in free agency after this season, not knowing exactly where the economics are going to be and not knowing where I'm going to be and how I'm going to be seen as a player. And I think that's why you have to pull back a little bit and not think of the world. We have a problem because a lot of us, many of us, almost all of us, don't relate to the kind of wealth that is generated by athletes, where they have reached a point where it's money, but it's also a way you want to get money. Rather than, I'll do anything for that kind of check. $34 million, I'll do whatever you want. You want me to sweep the garden after the games? You want me to clean the locker rooms? You want me to sell tickets? Whatever it takes, I'll take $34 million. But he's like, yeah, but that $34 million means X, Y, and Z, or Z, Y, and X, or however you want to put it. Here's the list of things that come with taking that $34 million that I can afford to look at and evaluate. $34 million is a lot of money, but here are the things that are more important. Maybe his wife hates Boston, right? Maybe she just hates living there. I don't know. So it's not as crazy as everybody wants to jump to immediately. Hey, the good, the bad, and the dumb is coming up. That's not crazy. That's coming up next as we continue.
Well, it can get crazy.
It can get crazy. It's good times. It's next on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, before we get to the good, the bad, and the dumb, a reminder, everyone's temperature varies throughout the day, so it's important that you screen for fever in the morning and in the evening. Fever, a sign of COVID-19. Stay safe with the Exergen Temporal Scanner. All right, it's Friday. We're heading into the weekend, and then we're into the holiday week. What's the good of the day? I'm already feeling good now. I could feel even better. What's the good of the day?
Yeah, well, I mean, you want to feel really good? How about a bonus good? How about two goods in one day?
Two goods?
Yeah, I saw this story. At first, I was like, oh, is this going to be a dumb thing? But then I started thinking about it a little bit more, and I'm like, you know what? I'm totally behind this. Steve Cohen is talking about having a Bobby Bonilla Day.
Yes!
Where every year, what is it? It's July 1st, right?
July 1st!
Every year on July 1st, it's Bobby Bonilla Day. Brings Bobby Bonilla out via golf cart or via Mets bullpen cart, whatever they, however they want to dress it up, and they present him with an oversized check.
I think this is a brilliant idea.
And then I guess, you know, maybe drive around the stadium so the fans can, you know, salute him and thank him for his time with the Mets.
I think this is a brilliant idea because Steve Cohen, who just bought this team, is like, look, this isn't my sin, but I got to take care of it, and I can take care of it. So instead of us being laughed at every July 1st for a deal I didn't make, why don't I just have a good time with
it? Have some fun with it.
And just have some fun with it and let everybody know that as the new owner of this team, I'm going to make light of this scenario that everyone picks on us every single year for.
I mean, you got to do it at least once. Do it the first time.
Do it at least once.
See how it feels. Maybe Bobby Bonilla is a little embarrassed by it. But why would you? You're getting a $1 million check every year, until 2035?
I would be at Citi Field tomorrow if I was Bobby Bonilla. I'd be like, yes, damn right you're giving me that check every single July 1st.
Yeah.
I earned it. You know, I earned it. That's not my problem.
I'm already picturing, you know, marketing. You know, give a bobblehead. Bobby Bonilla bobblehead holding a big check.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, good until 2035.
I love that.
It's fantastic.
I love that Bobby Bonilla story every July 1st. I love it because
it's
Bonilla. There are some people who have written the economics. I don't care. They're like, it was better for the Mets. No, I don't care. It's funny because the Mets have to pay this check every single year. Bobby Bonilla is like the mafia when they go, hey, could you help me with something? I have a problem with this one. Yeah, we'll take that. Just give us a couple percent. And you have to give them a couple percent forever because they took care of that one thing. That's Bonilla. Bonilla took care of one thing for them. And they said, yeah, no worry. We're making so much money off this thing, this Bernie Madoff thing. Don't you worry. The checks will be pouring in.
Year after year.
And Bonilla's like, just give me a couple percent. I'm okay. And every year they have to do this. If I'm Steve Cohen, I'm like, you know what? Let's celebrate this as a Metsy thing. I'm the Mets owner. Let's have fun. I hope he does it. I hope he does it too. I think it's great.
I think it's fantastic. Brilliant idea. I don't see anything wrong with it.
Me either. I think you're right. There might be a little trepidation on Bonilla's part. Like, I'd rather just get my check and give me my money. But at the same time,
you know, what's he doing? He's out of the limelight. This is something where we celebrate him year after year because it won't just be a Mets thing. I mean, maybe, you know, year six or seven into it, it might be a Mets thing. But for us, the first year, that's a nationwide talking point.
Yeah. I like that oversized check idea, too. You know what I mean?
Maybe he'll have an issue with that.
Yeah.
All I'm picturing is that one guy. Remember the movie Semi-Pro?
Yeah, that's just true. Yeah.
I keep going to cash his check and they won't take it.
Yeah, I kind of understand that. But I'm
all for it.
Couldn't you like have him come out there and like play the Price is Right theme or something? Like when he comes out there?
Something, you know.
Like, I'm going to play the theme. Here, see if you get this. Hold on. And like imagine Bonilla coming out of like a cart.
Yeah.
And just like walking up, like kind of doing that slow jog of excitement, getting his big check.
I don't know. He might be walking at this point.
That's true. He could be walking at this point. Yeah, you never know. That's a good idea. All right, what's the second good of the day?
The second good of the day, a little partial dumb because I didn't even know this tournament existed, but Tiger Woods is set to play one more tournament this year.
Yeah, I saw this.
PNC Championship.
Yeah, he's going to play with his boy,
He's going to play with his son. How fantastic is this? Now, this tournament, the PNC, it's the event formerly known as the PNC Father-Son Challenge. They had to get rid of the father. No, they had to get rid of the son part of it because
you have a you have daughters in this.
Well, Annika Sorenstam is playing in this tournament. Her father.
Oh, I got you. Okay, that's
so
pretty cool.
Can't have father and son when it's right. father and daughter there. But it's only reserved for those players who have won a major or the PGA Championship.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, but the field, I mean, this is going to be televised. And I don't know why it's never been televised. This field looks fantastic.
So you've got all of these players bringing their kids with them.
Yes.
To play golf.
Yes.
All right.
And some of them are older. Obviously, you know, you have like a father, you know, an older father who's playing with his, you know, 20-something-year-old son or, you know, even older than that.
Yeah.
Tiger is going out there with Charlie, which I love. This is fantastic.
I think it's cool.
But other people in this tournament, I'm just going to read off a few names. John Daly, Jim Furyk, Padraig Harrington.
John Daly's kid is really good.
Yeah, Lee Jansen.
Lee Jansen.
Bernard Langer, who just tore up the Masters.
Isn't his son a little old to be playing
Maybe.
This?
I don't know. Greg Norman. It's not a kid thing. That's the thing. It's
Wait a minute. So what do you mean it's not a kid thing? It's not a father-son slash
sibling
tournament?
It's not a father-kid thing.
It's a father-son
It's a father-son tournament.
Well, so your kid can be 42 and be in this thing. Okay.
That's what I'm gathering from it. Gary Player and his grandson.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
You know, Justin Thomas and his father.
Yeah.
You know, Lee Trevino will be out there with his son.
So on the one hand, you get to see major champions play golf. And on the other hand, you get to see spoiled golf brats play golf as well. Is that what we're saying?
Well, if you want to stress it down that way, I mean, you're kind of sucking the fun out of it.
But can you imagine being a kid that's like at a local public course? He's hitting terrible range balls every day to try to make it, you know, make them something, make it on tour. And then there's a tournament where all these wealthy golfers and their kids who grow up with putting greens in the backyard are playing golf on television.
Yeah. Well, I can picture that. I'm not trying to
go. That would make me kind of like, I got to go out there and play harder.
I don't want to go down that route. I'm trying to have some fun, Tony.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, look, I mean, okay, let me clarify this.
Yes.
I hate to be like this. Don't get me wrong, but I don't need 100 feel good sports stories. All right. Watching Charlie Woods play golf with his dad. Great. That's fine. I would want to see Tiger play golf. I couldn't care less about Charlie playing golf. Does that make sense?
No, I get it.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like, oh my God. An 11-year-old prodigy of Tiger Woods is I have no reason to care about that. I like Tiger playing golf.
But what if he tears it up?
He's 11.
I know.
He's not going to tear it up.
We don't know that.
Did you see the scorecard for when he had that good round?
Yes.
The longest hole was 300 yards.
Yeah, he probably still beat me.
He's not hitting. He's not birdying a 424-yard par 4. Like he was playing a pitch and putt course. That's still a great accomplishment. Don't get me wrong, but let's not pretend at 11 he's hitting it 320. You know, he's gonna play from the little tees and tee it up with his dad.
Yeah. Does Tiger get to tee it up from there, or does he
I wish he would.
Does he have to hit from the further back? And, you know, to that point, does Lee Trevino, who's a little bit older in age, does he still have to hit from the black tees?
If I'm Lee Trevino, man. Yeah, you got to. Lee Trevino's old.
Yeah, I know.
How old's Lee Trevino?
Old.
Lee Trevino was 50, like when I was in high school. He's got to be in his 80s.
He's got to be, right?
He's got to be. Lee Trevino, I remember Lee Trevino going on the senior tour at 50, probably 90, 91?
He's 80.
Okay. So, yeah, it was about 30 years ago. Man, if he still can play. Gary Player can still play. Yeah, so there you go. All right, what's the bat of the day?
The bat of the day. I lost my page. Hold on. The bat of the day. Wonder Woman 1984. Did you hear about this?
No.
So Wonder Woman 1984 is going to be released to HBO Max on Christmas Day.
What?
Right? It's the latest Wonder Woman movie. They've been holding off on releasing it to major theaters because, you know, they want people to be there.
Do you know why they're doing this?
Well,
go ahead. Finish the story.
I think it's just because they need to get it out.
Because it stinks.
Because it stinks? You think so?
Yes.
Okay.
I guarantee you they did testing on this film and it stinks. And they went, ah, crap, we're not reshooting this thing.
Yeah. But where I'm thinking about it is that this would have been a huge summer blockbuster. Whether it stunk or not, a lot of people would have gone that first weekend to check it out.
Yep.
Is this ushering in a new era of film releases?
I think,
I know you and I have talked about it over and over again, but this is we're starting to see more and more of this because, you know, we hear about, you know, AMC might be closing completely because no one's going. They're running out of cash. They'll be out of cash by the end of the year. And then you have a movie like this, which would have been great for the box office. They're just going to release it to HBO Max now.
All right, real quick. I'm going to give you my thoughts on this real quick. Yes, is there a romanticized feel about going to the movie theater? Yeah, where it's a big screen and popcorn and bringing your friends. Is there? Of course. But you know what? I never complained and I never looked for another way to get movies than when I went to a Blockbuster or a Hollywood Video. I never thought this stinks. I actually looked forward to going to Blockbuster and Hollywood Video. They had everything.
To check out the new releases.
They had new releases. Yep. And I could find any old movie that I wanted. Then Netflix came along and these other services came along, but they don't have everything. Like Netflix doesn't have every movie that was ever made ever. You only get what they have. And you have to go to, like, maybe you have to subscribe to something else or something else. But we've learned to accept that rather than going to a video store and renting a DVD.
But now we're in an era where there's so many different streaming services.
Hold on. Let me finish.
Okay.
Let me finish. Well, we don't miss that. We don't miss going to, we now accept the world that we have now, which is whatever streaming service you want to subscribe to, you get all these movies, etc. Same thing's going to happen in the movie theater industry. We're going to eventually go, yeah, that was nice, but you know what? Different time. We're now doing something else. We're not going to the theater anymore. We're not standing in line for tickets. We're not standing in line for popcorn. I think eventually you just sort of, it just becomes the norm of something else and you lose what you used to have.
Right.
And we are heading in that direction.
You know, drive-in movie theaters used to be a huge thing.
Sure, sure.
And now you're lucky if your town has one.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Or you know, a situation where, remember the, what's Miami Dolphin Stadium called?
Right now?
Yeah.
Hard Rock Cafe?
Hard Rock Stadium.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Remember when they said, hey, we're going to have a drive-in theater at our stadium?
Because that's right.
They were just losing money. The stadium is just sitting there. No one's using it. And we celebrated that idea. That was a huge deal where you say that to anyone in the 50s or the 60s, they're like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
Like, why not I just go down to the local drive-in like I always do?
So that's where I'm thinking. I think you're right.
I mean, as for me, like movie theater experience, I only go if it's a big budget action film that I want to see on a big screen.
Yeah.
I don't go and see like the rom-coms or any type of comedy.
Nope, I don't do those either. I wait. I have patience now. I didn't when I was younger, but I have more patience now to see a movie that's kind of like, I could go see that.
All right, we got to get to
the dumb of the day.
Dumb of the day, real quick. The dumb of the day is that the people have spoken. And that after all the backlash of not airing The Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, they're going to be airing Thanksgiving Charlie Brown and Christmas Charlie Brown on TV.
On where?
PBS.
Wonderful. Our tax dollars in the making.
Yes. So finally, something good coming out of this. Because, you know, not having that on just TV, I mean, that's nostalgia for us.
Yeah. I don't know. I just miss those. I want to see those. I want to see the Thanksgiving one.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't do that in the first place.
Yeah, where Peppermint Patty rudely invites her to a Thanksgiving feast
and
with Charlie
friends.
Brown. And friends. Charlie Brown didn't ask for any of them to come over. They just came over.
And asking Charlie Brown, a 10-year-old, to make a traditional Thanksgiving dinner.
And Marcy has to finally lay down the reality to Peppermint Patty. It's like, you did invite yourself, sir.
Sir. She always called her sir.
And then Charlie Brown got his grandmother to haul in the rest of these kids that apparently have no families that are feeding them on Thanksgiving to lug them to grandmother's house.
So you can watch Charlie Brown Thanksgiving November 22nd on PBS.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be commercial free.
Maybe.
Dollars at work.
Since it's PBS.
Brought to you by York Peppermint Patty. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's Wake Up Call and Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us in this Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. In this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage, need a mortgage that fits your life, Rocket can. Yesterday, we told you, when we were on the air, the news of Klay Thompson's injury wasn't known. We knew he'd gotten hurt, but when we were on the air, we did not know. And now we do know, because yesterday it was announced he's out for the year with a tear to his right Achilles. He had a torn ACL that kept him out of this year.
I know. I you feel bad for this guy.
Oh, my God.
Can you not?
Tried to come back, tried to play in the finals, got hurt. You know, he got hurt in the finals. Remember he made that big return? Remember that? It was against Toronto.
Remember he was walking off in the tunnel and then they almost put him in a straitjacket and drag him off the court?
Yep. And he missed all of this shortened season. And remember, it wasn't a shortened season when it started and he wasn't looking like he was going to play if they had gone 82+. You know, the postseason. But he was the main reason why they got the number two pick, because he didn't play at all. Steph Curry got hurt. He came back. But now he's done for another year. Another year.
Another
and who knows?
Year.
Who knows what it means when you have those two types of injuries?
I know. You know, it's weird because we used to think, you know, once you had your, once you tore your ACL, you were done. That was your career ending. You know, Tommy John, same thing. Career ending.
Right.
You know, now it's moved on. Like, you can recover from those. But Achilles, that's still, you know, jury's still out on that one.
Exactly. All right, hour two coming up. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.